Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing?
Hey, John, I am well. How are you doing?
That sounds very robot. Are you sure you're okay?
I am okay. I am doing fine. Thank you very much. I'm an AI.
That's the charisma that we bring to the FinTech Newscast. Nice. You. Yeah. And speaking of charisma, we have Dr. David Tuyo, the CEO of University Credit Union, on with us this week to look at an area I don't think we've ever talked to anyone from a credit union. Is that right, Steve?
I don't think so. No, I think this is our first credit union chat, so it should be a really good one.
All right, this will be great, Dr. Tuyo, since anything you say will be new to us, so it's pretty easy. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Great to be here and to be the first.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess to start us off with something basic. What's the main differences between a bank and a credit union?
It's a great question and something that we get very often as people learn more about an alternative to traditional banks. And so credit unions really started in the United States in 1908 as a disruptor to bank systems that were around at the time and then grew from there as much as 25,000 credit unions before having the consolidation that we've seen through both banking and credit union over the last 25, 30 years and currently operate around 5,000 credit unions in the United States. Credit unions are not-for-profit financial cooperatives, so they're member-owned. There are no shareholders, but they are a stakeholder model in the fact that they serve typically, you know, a select employer group, or they serve a particular community or county or state. And they have a volunteer board of directors typically as well. So in a governance structure, the credit union really has the voice of the member, the voice of the end user of that particular cooperative at the highest level. And so it really is a unique business model that has been around for a very long time and very passionate about it. I've been on both sides of the fence. They both have their own merit and importance in our economy as a whole. But I can tell you that credit unions offer tremendous value, and we're seeing growth on balance sheets and in member size too across the United States.
So, David, I know that I saw figures maybe 5 years ago that sort of highlighted how the different players in sort of the retail banking space in terms of, you know, the bigger banks, the fintechs and the credit unions sort of broke down. Do you have a good idea as to what the landscape looks like now in 2021 in terms of what percentage of the population uses one of those three services?
Yeah, it's really, really a great question. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I do believe that currently we're around 150 million members in the United States of credit unions. So a pretty sizable amount of people belong to a credit union in the United States. When you look at the asset size, I think that's where the largest differential is. If you look at just at credit unions, we just surpassed $2 trillion in assets in the entire credit union system within the United States. And if you look at the big four banks, all over $2 trillion in assets individually. So from a size perspective, the big four banks obviously dominating the space in the United States, while the 6,000 credit unions make up a much smaller segmentation individually as a whole, probably end up around five or six of the largest bank in the country if we were to combine all of our assets into one pool.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And I understand that also. So I've never used one, although I think I explored one maybe 5 years ago or so, but there are membership requirements for them. What are the membership requirements for your credit union, and how can those affect also the outreach that you can do, because you have, again, sort of a limited pool of customers that you can go after?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we focus more on depth than width. And so when you look at the depth of knowledge of understanding our customer base, it's going to be much deeper than what you might see at a traditional financial institution. So we focus just on the university community. And so if for us particularly, we focus on students, employees, and alumni of specific universities that we partner with across, in our case, the Western United States, predominantly majority of those are in the state of California. And so we look at different give back initiatives, whereas a normal bank or credit union might be looking at doing something locally in their local city or community. For us, we really focus on giving back to universities in different ways, through scholarships, through employee scholarships, through finding ways to make up funding shortfalls that they have, university grants, food pantry, addressing food insecurity that we see on campuses across the United States as well. So a variety of ways about how we're a little bit different. But again, as a not-for-profit financial cooperative, you know, our ability to give back, you know, our, from a profit perspective to those communities is really a unique value proposition that we have as a credit union.
So it sounds like you do very well on an emphasis that seems to be kind of more prominent lately on the ESG side, like good governance, good responsibility. There's no competing stock price to raise prices or add more fees to goose up a stock price. Has that helped lately with attracting more members to your credit union?
Absolutely. I think that this is something that we're seeing rise over the past few years. We did a panel of millennials. This is now 5 years ago, and this was in the state of Washington, where we were trying to analyze, you know, how do people make this generation make a choice around their retail banking, but also other retail choices? Where do they shop? Where do they go? You know, what restaurants do they choose to go to? And obviously, you know, the data showed us that, you know, the corporate social responsibility of an organization played a large role in their decision. However, then when we asked about where they had their personal financial services, the majority of them had them in locations where that particular financial institution recently had, you know, a pretty large issue in that violating the same standards of which how they choose to other retail choices. And so for shopping and whatnot. And so I found that interesting that there was a fragmentation about the differences between those two choices. Whereas with what we're seeing today is now people are starting to make choices and saying, well, look, should I really bank here? Is that really who I want to be with? Or do I want to choose this other institution that aligns more with my personal core values? We're seeing that, again, great growth. We've doubled in size over the last 4 years, having tremendous growth, in response to what we believe is our core values, our championship core values at our organization. But also recently, we reduced fees. So while we'll see others increasing fees or trying to find ways to, increase returns to their shareholders, our return is to the stakeholder. If I can reduce fees, that's a greater return to my members. If I can find a way to lower our interest rates on loans, again, another greater return. If I can find a way to increase our savings rates to our members, again, another type of greater return. You talked about conflicts. What we did inside our organization, I think, is truly unique, especially in financial services. We further reduce conflicts of interest because we have zero individual incentives in our entire organization. So that way, when a member comes to us or a new member comes to us, prospective member comes to us and seeks financial advice or guidance from one of our coaches, one of our associates, they are going to give them the best advice for them with their best interests in mind, and not because they're trying to earn an incentive to sell a mortgage or to sell a insurance product or something like that. We eliminated all those at our organization a number of years ago. And I think that is also another key component of our culture and then also our success over the past few years.
Yeah, that's definitely a benefit and creating a positive force in the community and for your members. But on the other side, you have the pull away, I guess, from embedded finance products like Buy Now, Pay Later, things like Apple Pay and Apple offering financing and other companies offering financing for their products. Is there a way to keep up with that? Or can you offer a competing like Buy Now, Pay Later kind of product? Or do you just engage on their main items and some of that just has to go that way?
No, I mean, you know, talking about Apple, other products and services, other providers, either people that are playing on the fringe or peripheral type of offerings and financial services are directly competing. They do a fantastic job. You know, nothing to take away from them. I think Apple does a great job. The experience, how they've integrated, Goldman Sachs or Chase or whatever it might be, depending on which provider we're talking about, in as far as their card offerings or whatnot, they do a great job. As far as us, we are able to compete at a very high level because of our focus on operating expenses, our efficiencies that we build internally, the automation that we do. But we also know that we can't be involved in every single product and service out there, and we have to be very strategic. And at the board level, at the executive level, what decisions we're going to make to choose to compete on, because to your point, at our size, we'd be stretched so thin, we'd be out of business in no time. And so When it comes to buy now, pay later, for instance, we're working on solutions today. We have conversations with MasterCard, with Visa on developing and delivering these products and services in the very near future. So although those have been around for a few months now, of course, we'll be somewhat of a fast follower in some of these solutions where we rely on our third parties. And then other areas, we'll be a pioneer. We chose to be a pioneer in AI and machine learning, particularly in the member touch points. And we feel that that's one area that's done very well for us. But when it comes to some areas, for sure, we have to stay away from and stick to our discipline around what we can and can't do and rely on our partners to help us, although in this case, a delayed manner.
Sure, that the world changes all the time and you make adjustments as you go and adjust your products, I guess. But you're also implementing, like you said, AI, and you see the Royce virtual assistant. I saw that on your website. I haven't tried it, but how did that come about and how has it been working for you?
Yeah, I mean, we've now been leveraging Royce. We'll say, for instance, just one of our bots. We have several bots, but we'll talk about Royce. That's our member facing bot. And so we launched Royce in July of last year. We leveraged a Bay Area partner for this particular solution. They've been great for us. And we launched that in less than a month. And so we had our website bot as we led with, started learning about how our members want to interact with that bot. Of course, with our constituency, with students and faculty, administration and alumni, the interactions are quite different. The words that they use are quite different. And so we had a pretty steep learning curve when it came into some of these areas. But after that, we then integrated Royce into mobile banking, conversational banking. We rolled Royce into our contact center. So now when you call our contact center, you're actually going to be speaking with Royce. We think that it's far advanced over other bots that you might interact with from customer service touch points that you have, like the airlines or something like that. And it's been good. We also integrated Royce in our loan applications, our new membership applications. It's surprising how we feel that sometimes the loan applications are simple and straightforward, but we live in this space each and every day. And so having Royce there 24/7, 365 to support our member owners walking through that loan application, understanding what's being asked, where to find that data, we find a much higher completion rate and success rate and ultimately speed of execution to make sure that we get funds in our members' hands as quickly as possible to solve their needs, wants, and desires.
You mentioned a technology partner. Have you seen a lot of big tech companies offering financial services and kind of pulling back a little bit too? We saw Google kind of pull back on their Plex checking account offering, instead focusing on offering services to providers instead. Is that the trend you see to achieve these kind of things that would need a large scale, but you can compete by partnering with larger tech providers?
Yeah, I think so. I think you make a good point. A lot of people are talking about banking as a platform or banking as a service, to where you're really partnering in a cooperative model with tech providers, fintech companies, to allow them to leverage our balance sheet, leverage our membership base, to then solve problems and add value to people's lives. And I think that's what we're seeing that already. We're seeing a pivot away from direct competition more into a co-opetition or a cooperative model. You see that again with Google's Plex model. They actually had a couple of banks, they had a couple of credit unions that were in the pipeline as part of that beta. And now moving to more of a, let's look at a partnership and service orientation model versus trying to get directly into the banking service. As you know, probably one of the most heavily regulated industries in the entire country. And, I think that requires some level of expertise. And I think as we, get into that gray area, people say, you know what, maybe this isn't really worth it. The amount of expense that to get there is not worth it. Let's find somebody that we can partner with. And our organization, we're also involved in several different collaborations of various credit unions across the country, where we're actively seeking out, addressing, and in some cases, even investing in fintech companies as partners and as investments.
So do you see any technology or tech companies out there where you're like, oh, that's really interesting, like to work with them or partner with them, or you just admire what they're doing?
The list is unbelievably long. It really is. I mean, I think that there's exciting things around what Interface AI is doing. I think there's a company called Deep Future Analytics that is really exciting around how they're addressing predictive modeling and the amount of data that they're leveraging. They're not sticking to just metadata. They're really getting into your specific primary data to give modeling that's relevant for your particular membership base. When you consider a model like ours, a business model, you couldn't just take municipal level or regional level or state level data to try to model what's going to happen in certain scenarios with my company or my business base or our loan portfolio. You're going to have to take a look at a different subset of that data. And so it's exciting to see how people are understanding that, you know what, we have to get more granular, we have to get more molecular in our approach. And so those are just a couple of areas that a couple of companies I find really interesting right now. There's also a company that's focusing on banking as a service out of Florida, recently just relocated from Miami to Jacksonville, called Nimbus. And an interesting platform trying to approach to this open banking strategy that's getting more and more popularized in the market. So those are just a couple off the top of my head.
And those are interesting examples for sure. But yeah, if you're working in AI, I assume you're keeping an eye out on the latest things going on in fintech and potential technologies you guys could leverage.
Yeah, I think other things that, you know, there's a lot of new companies that are focusing on like internal operations and efficiencies and automation. You know, in the past, these things were outside the reach of smaller companies. I remember when I first started looking at AI, I talked to one company and they said, you know, unless you have 100,000 high net worth clients, we don't want to talk to you. And so obviously, you know, for the majority of community-based banks.
We have the same policy here, David.
and so, you know, as a credit union, a large focus of ours is to serve those of modest means, to serve the underserved, to serve the unbanked. Many credit unions devote their entire business model to just that segment of their population, the community of which they located. And so doing some great work, but unfortunately, they're not going to have that 100,000 high net worth clients. And so for us, you know, watching that technology come to become more accessible is a huge boon for us, and it allows us to scale in a way that we couldn't before. And so this low interest rate environment, maybe not as effective or doesn't affect us quite as much as it would have, you know, say 20 years ago, where we needed to double in size or increase by 50% to make sure that the decreased margins offset by volume. And so we're seeing that the ability to scale much more efficiently through these AI tools. Like internally, you know, you look at intranets today, intranets have now transitioned away from the old, here's a library of documents. Hopefully you clicked the right one. Hopefully you did the control F just the right way, so that way you could find the exact piece of information you need based on the company's policies or procedures to make sure you can do whatever it is that you're trying to execute within the organization. And now, you know, AI is facilitating that. So now it's, you know, you think about speed of service. So if somebody's talking to one of our coaches, they have a question about a particular topic, maybe it's something really, unique around a particular need. Maybe it's a sophisticated trust issue, or maybe it's something to do with financial counseling. Well, now they can go right to our internal bots and they can ask a quick question, and when our internal bot name is Coach, and Coach just, you know, gives the particular associate the information they need immediately, quickly, and accurately. We track the accuracy levels. All of our bots operate above 97% accuracy levels, and so it is a whole different world that we're experiencing. And I can't say enough about what these tools are doing for companies like ours.
Coach is a great name for an assistant, by the way. Better than Erica?
Yes.
No comment.
No comment there. Speaking of Erica, I'm assuming, David, that this is the case for you and most other CUs, and that given your skill, you're unable to kind of build things in-house. So you mostly rely on white label solutions, right?
That is absolutely correct. I mean, I would say, although our programming capabilities are increasing at an increasing rate, for us to be relevant and the market today as nimble as we need to be, we leverage heavily third parties across almost anything and everything we do.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. And one issue that I was curious about is also in terms of the marketing that you do, it seems like there's been this rise in what we call affinity banking, right? So people who go after fintechs that offer solutions for, say, the Asian community, disabled folks, the LGBT community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How can you as a credit union differentiate yourself in the market so that you're as attractive as those more niche sort of affinity-based platforms and products?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of credit unions readdress their strategic frame and really focusing more on a target market. For us, again, it is within the university community. So we're looking for people that have a high level of affinity for their particular universities that know that by banking with us, they'll get a high level rate of return first off. And then on top of that, the excess returns that we don't need for our regulatory requirements for our growth and net worth, that's gonna be plowed back and reinvested to their specific universities. And so it is a very different business model than, let's say, bank at a large bank and the profits go back to the shareholders and they have certain other requirements that maybe there's some nice social gains. But for us, it is about those that are passionate about, helping to fund research, those that are passionate about supporting various forms of athletics and even developing new areas in athletics, such as e-gaming and whatnot. And so these are just some of the things that we do across campus, again, supporting basic needs. I know that sounds interesting or odd in today's world, especially at a university campus, but you can think about financial literacy and financial education. These are necessary requirements for living adult life that unfortunately many are not prepared for as they leave the house and go on to get a higher education degree. So these are things, again, that we specialize in, that we continue to reinvest in, and we believe ultimately that we're the professors of our industry in this particular niche. But you make a really good point. There are a lot of people that spread thin across the community. They lack focus. But I think that you're seeing those institutions really have a slower growth rate. I think that if you analyze the regulatory reports, you'll see that their numbers are not nearly as good or nearly as strong, and they're probably being disrupted more. For us, we're not seeing that at the moment. But if we do, we'll continue to listen to our member owners, listen to the university communities we serve, and we're built to pivot very quickly.
Interesting. Can you, a question on the industry as well, can you change your field of membership? So can you broaden the scope of your target members, or are you locked into one community based on your funding documents or something?
Really great question, actually. Credit unions were founded to be focused on with those of a common bond. So member owners have to have a common bond. And then in 1998, HR 1151 passed, that allowed credit unions to expand their fields of membership. And that was in response heavily to do a lot with what was happening for many companies that were seeing consolidation or acquisition. So, you had Northrop Grumman. Well, you had a Northrop Credit Union, you had a Grumman Credit Union. When they come together, of course, now you had to make a decision. And so one credit union would go out of business or they'd have to merge together. And so the response was, okay, look, maybe we should allow credit unions to expand their field membership as long as there's a common bond amongst those members. And so, yes, that's happening across the board. You can see people, you have to apply through a regulatory process. The regulators at the state or the federal level will approve that expansion for your field membership based on the common bond and the rules and regs of that particular state or that based on the federal charter. So there are opportunities to do that. Many credit unions have been expanding. We see that in California. California is a very credit union friendly state with over 24% of the population using a credit union. And so we see a pretty good membership base in California. Across the United States, we're only about 9% of the total systems assets. But maintaining our numbers, we're growing from 7, we're at 9 now. And I think credit unions have a very bright future, especially given our current climate around a focus of, we want to have banking services, but we also know that we want to have really good corporate social responsibility. We want to have a banking partner that's going to improve the lives of all, not just their shareholders. I've been around in banking, investment banking. Again, they do amazing things. I'm not trying to besiege them whatsoever. I think banks are here to stay for a very long time, but I do think credit unions make for a great partner to their communities they serve. People should take a look at them, but also I think from a fintech perspective, valid partners across the United States that fintechs could be looking to credit unions for funding. They could be looking to fintechs or credit unions as partners. And then also, an immediate user base that if there's a unique need, want, or desire that that particular fintech company is fulfilling, you know, a credit union has an immediate membership base to start working on proof of concepts, to start looking at, you know, hey, how much, what's the response rate? You know, looking at a beta pool of members to say, okay, look, you know, this membership base is going to agree to be part of our beta and give us feedback and be and help us really improve where we're at to then roll out to the greater markets. I think that there's really an endless potential here in partnerships. And I think that, you know, again, given credit unions' cooperative model, I think fintechs will see credit unions be very open and excited to partner with them.
So we also have the banking industry, I guess, along with all other industries were affected by COVID. What were some of the changes that you saw as a result of COVID-19? And also, it seems like in my experience, at least, credit unions have sort of prioritized more of the in-person experience over the digital experience as well. And how, what effect did that have on your relationships with your customers or your members?
I don't know how much more time we have. I could spend a few hours on this one. and so with regards to this very traumatic pandemic that we've been going through the last, you know, 18 plus months, COVID-19 affected us tremendously, shutting down university campuses across California. Obviously, in all of our branches that are on campus are now closed. It left us with only one branch that was still open, and we did heavily rely on the in-person experience. We did heavily rely on the in-person interaction, and we had to move very, very quickly to other places, in particular, obviously digital, right? So we needed to figure out, you know, what competencies, capabilities were we lacking? Where were the gaps? How quickly could we fill them? Which ones meant the most to our member owners? And then obviously align our organization in a way that we could move very, very quickly. Our membership growth has always been very strong. We had membership growth numbers that dropped to below 1% from a trend perspective. So it was obviously getting to a threshold that we did not want to cross. Today, I'm happy to tell you that our team has done an amazing job. We have, you know, the our team of champions at University of Creighton is just, I mean, always in awe of what they are able to do and what they're capable of, but also how we united to really tackle this pandemic, to serve our member owners and make this huge change as an organization from a traditional in-person focus, brick and mortar, to getting more into the digital space. And that includes our AI initiatives, of course, and other things we already spoke about. Today, our membership growth is above 15%. We continue to reverse the trends that we saw during the pandemic. But, you know, without AI, again, this is another example. At one point during COVID at the peak, our contact center was decimated. And
oh, wow.
We had people that were, you know, obviously positive cases and various levels from mild and moderate to severe cases of COVID-19. It left us with only 5 people at one point in our contact center. As an organization our size, that's not a healthy level. However, because of our tool, Royce in particular, we're able to manage through that with very little effects to our member owners. And so thankfully, you know, again, as Royce stepped in, we were able to get through that. But COVID-19 did affect us quite seriously. At the same time, though, I will say our organization is stronger than it's ever been. We're prepared to compete and to deliver unparalleled value in the digital world. And it really helped us refocus and close the gap that we should have been addressing the entire time. I think another positive that we've seen, given our growth the last 4 years, we were looking at another operational center in the LA area. And as you know, real estate in California is not the cheapest. And so we were looking at different opportunities there, trying to find, you know, the right secondary center for us with the right population around us that we could for expansion and new hires. And we decided to no longer do that during the pandemic. We are renovating our main headquarters, building out a hoteling type of strategy within the entire main headquarters building. And then also looking at the majority of our employees now, our team members are working remotely from home. And we've actually now started sourcing talent, recruiting talent from all over the country. We have employees now in North Carolina, Florida, Texas, some of our employees from California are looking at other places to go. You know, one in particular was telling me that she was having difficulty affording a home in the state of California and was relocating to another state where she could afford it, and was asking permission if she could make the move. And we're like, absolutely, we want you to live your best life. We want our team members to be the best prepared to serve our member owners, and we want them to live their absolute highest quality of life that they can enjoy. And so some nice silver linings through this pandemic. And I know a lot of companies are looking at coming back into the office. They're looking at making it mandatory or scaling in over time, where you have to do so many days and then so many days, and then finally back to normal or back to pre-pandemic practices in January or February. But for us, we think that we're really here to stay, and we think that it actually reflects those who we serve as well.
Hmm. But another trend during the pandemic, especially I guess younger people doing a lot of day trading, Robinhood, crypto trading. Did you get have you been getting a lot of requests to hold cryptocurrencies or anything like that? Or do you have any plans in that direction?
We are in constant research in this area. We were also in constant discussions with our regulators, with our insurer, and all partners and stakeholders in our business model that we need to make sure are aligned when we go down and take on this endeavor. Our member owners have not made that request yet directly, but we do see, obviously from the transactions, from the ACH files, that they're heavily invested and they're using
Coinbase.
Exactly.
All these coming through.
All these things, right? So I think that's, keeping an eye on what's going on at the Fed, keeping an eye on what's happening with the Treasury and what their plans are. And
yeah, part of it, there's the rules aren't very clear yet, right?
It's very much so. And so I would say it's where cannabis banking was probably 6 years ago.
And I thought that was still pretty hazy as well, right?
Yeah. There's a little more clarity, and there's actually a different path. It's not, again, not something that we're involved in, but there's actually credit unions that focus heavily on cannabis banking, and some are making it there's one credit union in Colorado that it's their sole business. It's all they do. And
you're not involved with cannabis in your work life, is what you're saying.
Yes, we're not. Yeah, we do not perform any or serve anything given our business model. But again, others do a good job in our space. There's actually one credit union here in LA that's doing phenomenal work around cannabis banking. So, but with crypto, I think that we still need some clarity. Also, we need some type of tool. From a derivatives perspective, to hedge the risk, given the volatility of the various coins that we're seeing, we have to have some way that if we accept them on deposit, who's taking that risk, right? Or if we take it as a payment, how do we immediately hedge that risk from a volatility perspective? And some of those tools just don't exist today. Yeah. So from a volatility perspective, we need to have tools, and whether it's derivatives or something else, that allows us to reduce the volatility and the potential risk to our organization. And then I think it's a very real possibility that we could see those kinds of transactions start to happen, payments and whatnot. Also, in addition to that, I think, I'm curious about what's going to happen at the federal level around, a digital dollar or whatever might be happening there. But in the meantime, we just need a few tools to make sure that we can hedge our risk, manage it appropriately, or even insure the risk. And then at that point, obviously get very popular. One last thing, of course, in the market, as we continue to see increased liquidity, increased investment in various cryptos, obviously when you have higher levels of liquidity, it reduces volatility. And so these are good things that are happening. We see good trends, but at the same time, it's just not quite ready yet for prime time.
Sure. Yeah. We talked to a lot of fintechs. They're building up those institutional tools, but not quite ready for prime time. And yeah, the regulation's not clear anyway. But really interesting. You make me want to go back and finish my degree now so I can join the credit union.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to listening to future podcasts.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're lucky to have always have interesting guests like yourself. That's Dr. David Tuyo, the CEO of University Credit Union. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.